When speaking of people's wealth, some will talk about perceived wealth and actual wealth. Perceived wealth is when we see someone with a nice house, a new car, nice clothes, and lots of stuff. The tendency is to jump to the conclusion that they are wealthy. Of course, that can be an artificial measure of wealth. What you don't see is the mortgage behind the house, the lease behind the car, the line of credit or the credit cards that support the spending. A better way to measure wealth is by determining what's called actual wealth, and that's done by taking one's total assets and, of course, subtracting one's total liabilities. In fact, some say that actual wealth is comprised of three independent parts: economic wealth, social wealth, and intellectual wealth, and spiritual wealth should be added to that list. But all of us have heard about those who've won the lottery only to be financially worse off in 1 or 2 years. We're also aware of the tragedies that often accompany poverty. Both prosperity and poverty have their own unique challenges. This was recognized poignantly by a man who is identified as Agar, the son of Jaca, in Proverbs chapter 30. Proverbs 30, verses 7 through 9, Agar wrote, "Two things I ask of you, Lord. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. And then give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God." Trials and difficulties add strength and character to those who approach them with the right attitude and endure them. The classic passage on this is James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, where James says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces patience. Let perseverance or patience finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." Trials and difficulties add strength and character to those who endure them, but wealth, riches, affluence tend to make people weak and unstable. Laodicea was a wealthy banking center in Asia Minor, and it was proud of its wealth. The city was beautified with resplendent theaters and temples. It was noted for its manufacture of rich garments of black, glossy wool, and a medical school that made powder for the treatment of eye troubles. These sources of wealth are referred to in Jesus' criticism of the Church of Laodicea in Revelation 3, verses 14 through 20. Luke read this a moment ago. I will again read verses 15 through 18. Jesus said, "I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were either one or the other. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth. You say, 'I am rich, I have acquired wealth, and I do not need a thing.' But you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire so that you may become rich, and white clothes to wear so you can cover your shameful nakedness, and salve to put on your eyes so you can see." Frank McKinney Hubbard, better known as Ken Hubbard, was an American cartoonist, humorist, and journalist. He died in 1930. Just trying to give you a time period there where he lived. He once said, "I'll say this for adversity. People seem to be able to stand it. And that's more than I can say for prosperity." In Jeremiah 22, verse 21, God said to the people, I spoke to you in your prosperity, but you said, I will not hear. Human nature does not change. Prosperity tends to breed a sense of independence, false security, and pride. Prosperity and times of ease tend to be much more dangerous than poverty and trials. Psalm 30, verse 6 says, in my prosperity I said, I shall never be moved. The New Living Translation renders that, when I was prosperous, I said, nothing can stop me now. Someone has said that the danger of prosperity is simple. It binds us to the world. Prosperity leads us to think that we have found our place in the world, but the reality may be more like, many times prosperity simply means that the world has found its place in us. But we must understand that wealth is not equivalent to condemnation. Genesis 13:2 tells us that Abraham was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. Yet Abraham is held up as an example of a righteous man. In fact, Romans chapter 4, verse 12 tells us that we should follow in the footsteps of Abraham's faith. In Job chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, we are introduced to the man named Job in this way. In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and he had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people in the East. In Matthew 27, verse 57, we're told that Joseph of Arimathea had become a disciple of Jesus. Joseph is the one who requested Jesus' body after his crucifixion, and he buried it in his own tomb. Yet the first part of Matthew 27, verse 57 says that when evening had come, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph. Abraham was rich. Job was rich. Joseph of Arimathea was rich. There are others that we could mention. Wealth is not equivalent to condemnation. But the Bible does warn about the dangers of wealth. Affluence, prosperity, tends to increase a feeling of independence and false security. Before Israel entered the land of Canaan, Moses gave them this warning in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 11 through 20. He said, be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God. Going on to verse 17, you may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is to this day. If you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will surely be destroyed. Wealth, riches, gives one a sense of power, which is fleeting. It does not last. Proverbs 23, verses 4 and 5 says, do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it is gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. In the ancient world, the figure of a bird flying away symbolized fleeting wealth. Warnings against slaving for riches are as widespread in ancient and modern literature as is the disregard with which those warnings are treated. Someone has said there are two ways to be rich. One is to have everything you want, and the other is to be satisfied with what you have. Paul tells us in 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 and 8, godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. So if we have food and clothing, let us be content. How do you determine real wealth, actual wealth? In Luke 12, verses 13 through 21, Jesus was teaching what the text calls an innumerable multitude in chapter 12, verse 1. And someone from the crowd said to him, verse 13, Luke 12, 13, "Teacher, please tell my brother to divide our father's estate with me." Jesus replied, "Friend, who made me a judge over you to decide such things as that?" Then he said, "Beware. Guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own." Then he told them a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, "What should I do? I don't have room for all my crops." Then he said, "I know. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. Then I'll have enough room to store all my wheat and other goods, and I'll sit back and say to myself, 'You have enough stored away for many years to come. Now take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for?" A person is a fool, verse 21 says, to store up earthly wealth. Jesus said, to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. Again in verse 15, Jesus said, "Life is not measured by how much you own." We're told in Proverbs 28, verse 6, "Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways." In 1901, Andrew Carnegie was the richest man in the world. When he was in his early 30s, he drafted a memo to himself and he wrote, "The amassing of wealth is one of the worst species of idolatry. No idol is more debasing than the worship of money." In the same memo, he wrote that he would retire at the age of 35 to pursue the practice of philanthropic giving, because he said, "The man who dies rich dies disgraced." During the last 18 years of his life, he gave away around $350 million, roughly $5.2 billion in 2020. This was almost 90% of his fortune. He gave the money to charities, foundations, and universities. He established 3,000 libraries, for example. He founded Carnegie Hall, Carnegie Institution for Science, Carnegie Mellon University, and on and on. He once made the following statement. He said, "I was born in poverty, and I would not exchange its sacred memories with the richest millionaire's son who ever breathed. What does he know about mother or father? These are mere names to him. Give me the life of the boy whose mother is a nurse, seamstress, washwoman, cook, teacher, angel, and saint, all in one, and whose father is guide, exemplar, and friend. No servants to come between. These are the children who are born to the best fortune. Some men think that poverty is a dreadful burden, and wealth leads to happiness. What do they know about it? They know only one side. They imagine the other. I have lived both, and I know that there is very little in wealth that can add to human happiness beyond the small comforts of life. Millionaires who laugh are rare. My experience is that wealth is apt to take the smiles away." John D. Rockefeller is another individual with accomplishments similar to Andrew Carnegie. In fact, He was a contemporary of Andrew Carnegie. Carnegie was born in 1835. Rockefeller was born in 1839. Carnegie died in 1919, and Rockefeller died in 1937. Carnegie made his fortune in steel, and Rockefeller made his fortune in oil. Rockefeller was also a philanthropist, giving away most of his fortune. He retired early and established numerous charitable trusts, including the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, Rockefeller Foundation, and on and on. His son, John D. Rockefeller Jr., once said, "The poorest man I know is the man who has nothing but money." Though there are significant differences in terms of wealth, we might say that King Solomon was a Carnegie Rockefeller of antiquity. I believe Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, and he made this statement in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. "I said to myself, come on, let's try pleasure. Let's look for the good things in life. But I found that this too was meaningless. So I said, laughter is silly. What good does it do to seek pleasure? After much thought, I decided to cheer myself with wine. And while still seeking wisdom, I clutched at foolishness. In this way, I tried to experience the only happiness most people find during this brief life in this world. I also tried to find meaning by building huge homes for myself and by planting beautiful vineyards. I made gardens and parks, filling them with all kinds of fruit trees. I built reservoirs to collect the water to irrigate my many flourishing groves. I bought slaves, both men and women, and others were born into my household. I also owned large herds and flocks, more than any of the kings who had lived in Jerusalem before me. I collected great sums of silver and gold, the treasure of many kings and provinces. I hired wonderful singers, both men and women, had many beautiful concubines. I had everything a man could desire. So I became greater than all who had lived in Jerusalem before me, and my wisdom never failed me. Anything I wanted, I would take. I denied myself no pleasure. I even found great pleasure in hard work, a reward for all my labors. But as I looked at everything I had worked so hard to accomplish, it was all so meaningless, like chasing the wind. There was nothing really worthwhile anywhere." Solomon denied himself nothing. He pursued entertainment and pleasure, all forms of gratification, everything that riches could buy. Yet time and again throughout the book, he made it clear that none of those things brought satisfaction, fulfillment. In a well-known statement at the end of the book, Solomon said in chapter 12, verse 13, "Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. Only by faithfully serving God can satisfaction be found. Actual wealth is found in Christ." I'm going to read a few verses from the book of Ecclesiastes and one from the book of Philippians. They just use terminology that give emphasis to the point that we just made. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 7, Paul says, "In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins in accordance with the riches of God's grace." Chapter 1, verse 18, "I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people." Chapter 2, verse 7, "In order that in the coming ages he might show the incomparable riches of his grace expressed in his kindness to us in Christ Jesus." Chapter 3, verse 8, "Although I am less than the least of all the Lord's people, this grace was given me to preach to the Gentiles the boundless riches of Christ." Chapter 3, verse 16, "I pray that out of his glorious riches he may strengthen you with power through his spirit in your inner being. Chapter 4, Philippians chapter 4, verse 19. My God will meet all your needs according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus. Jesus told the woman at the well that he could give her living water. Jesus told the crowd in John chapter 6 that he was the bread from heaven, and that whoever would eat this bread would never hunger and would live forever. True riches, actual wealth, peace, contentment, forgiveness, hope, things that money cannot buy, these can only be found in Christ. Proverbs 10 verse 22 says, the blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. Again and again, Jesus emphasized the fact that only he can meet all man's needs and desires if man will only deny himself, take up his cross, and follow him. The richest life possible is promised to all who will humbly submit to the will of Christ.